Okay, today's daf is Kaf Gimel. We're going to start at the top, Amar Rava. Okay, so we were, let's remind ourselves where we were. We were discussing the Isha Mishum Chitzav. We were trying to find proofs, right, to Rabbi Yochanan, the Isha Mishum Chitzav. We saw this machloket. When we're talking about fire, are you chayav in fire because it's as if your arrow shot it out, meaning as if you shot an arrow and you basically caused the damage? Or is it Mishum Mamono, that your fire is called your possession, right? And then one of them said, what do you mean? It can't be your possession because it has no mamash. It's not an actual thing. And the other opinion said, no, it, you know, we view it as, what was his reason again? Because, Chitzav, right? So my time, and then, sorry, Rishlakish, why didn't he say? Because Chitzav Mikocho Asle, right? And this doesn't go from your koch. That's what he said, right? This isn't coming from your koch, and that's why he doesn't view it as kocho, because the wind took it, right? It's not like an arrow would shoot from your kocho without a wind. Whereas the esh, the assumption is that the wind is what's taking the fire, and that's what makes it different. Okay. So now, Amar Rava, Kashele La'abai, Lamanda Amar Yisho Mishum Chitzav. Abaye, Rava says that it was difficult to Abaye, the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that we keep trying to prove and we can't succeed in proving it. So he says Abaye had difficulty with the opinion of Isha Mishum Chitzav. Why? Tamum ve'esh tepacha rachmana hechei mishkacha la. Now what's the problem here? We have, if you remember, there was this weird case that we said we'll discuss later about tamun ve'esh. What's tamun ve'esh? If you light a fire and it spreads by the wind, and it burns a field, and in the field you had something hidden, you're not chayav on what was hidden. Okay? So now, what do we say here? So why, if it's mishum chitzav, so if you shoot an arrow and it hits something that's underneath, hidden underneath something, are you chayav? Of course, right? If it's your koch that caused the arrow to be shot, and then of course you're going to be chayav. So therefore, how could you say that tamun be'esh is pacher if esh works just like your arrows? Okay? So what does he say? He says, v'nichale, he explained though, in other words, it was kashya, and now he's going to explain how it could work. The tamun is only going to be in a particular case. The tamun is pacher. V'nichale, ki gondin aflad leka le'oto chatzer, v'nafla gader shalom machmat leka v'alcha v'idlika v'izika b'chatzer acheret. Dehatam kalu lo chitzav. Okay, what does that mean? It's a case where there was a fire, okay, in one field. Now, there was a wall between, or a fence, between that field and the other field, meaning that the fire never would have gotten there. Okay, it was clear, right? It's interesting, because fire, we always say, you never know how far it's going to get. But their assumption is that the fire is not going to get to that spot because there's a fence. Now, what happens if the fence falls down after you start the fire? Somehow it falls, not because of the fire, okay? It falls for some other reason. And now the fire falls, yeah, the fence falls, and the fire spreads to the other chatzir. So now what are you going to say? You're chayav for fire, but you're not chayav for tamun, because that's a case where the fire went not mishum kocho. And that's what the Gemara says, dehatam kalu lechitzav. His arrows already are finished. And as he shot his arrow should have gotten to before the chatzir, right? The fire should have spread to before the chatzir. But then, when the fence fell and it spread farther, well, that was no longer from his koch. And that's why he's going to be patur. Sure, can you make it a little cooler in here? Thanks. So then they say, well, if that's the case, what's going to be the obvious question? What are we trying to say, right? So here's his area where it was closed in, right? Okay, so here he starts a fire. The assumption is it's going to spread to this whole area, is chayav in this whole area. When it gets to the other area, he's going to be patur b'tamun. That's what we're trying to explain, how tamun be'esh is patur. Okay, and that's because kalu lo chitzav is chitzim, we're only supposed to get to here, and they went out farther.
Tamun is hidden?
Hidden. Things that are hidden.
Buried.
Yeah. Could be buried. It could be hidden, you know, underneath something you can't see.
If the fire did cause the collapse of the wall, then it's not tamun.
Right, then it's not tamun. If the fire caused the collapse, then he's going to be chayav, because his fire caused it. That's chitzav.
If the fire goes over the wall, doesn't matter because the fire.
If it goes right, the assumption is that whatever kind of fence this was, it would have protected from fire, which is kind of strange to think about because I don't know what they made fences in those days that weren't. Couldn't have been burned down.
It's like a fireproof.
Right. It calls it a gader, but it seems more likely it was some sort of wall. Right.
The fire's going to go through.
Right. I don't know that they have fireproof doors. I seem to think. But they might have had something that was.
Right. The cause of the fire.
They may have had, like, they didn't have fields growing.
Right. Okay. So listen, now what do they say? Ihachi. Well, that doesn't make any sense to say that you're Patra B'tamun because. Linyan Galoi Nami Kalu Lo Chitzav. But he should be Patra for anything, not just Tamun, even something that was revealed. In other words, when it went into the next field, well, it wasn't his fault it went into the next field. He lit a fire, assuming it would be in this area. The wall got knocked down, or the fence, or whatever it is, and now the fire spread. Well, he shouldn't be responsible at all. So that's not a good case. So now what do they answer? Now I'm going to remind you, when we went, I'm going way back to Gittin. If you're remembering Gittin, we started off the Masechta with a big machlok at Rav and Rabbi. Is it Edim Mitzuyim, Lekaimo, or is it Lishma? Right? And then we get pushed into a corner and finally we say, well, actually, the one who said Bekin Lishma also agrees with the opinion that you also need, it's also Edim Mitzuyim Lekaimo. So, in other words, we had this big machloket, and then we're pushed into a corner to say, well, Chitzav doesn't really make so much sense in terms of this Tama Be'esh. So they say, well, don't worry. Lamandi itle mishum Chitzav, itle nyami mishum mamono. Okay, now we're going to say, the case where your Patra B'tamun is why? Because in a case where there's no issue of Chitzav, you're still going to be responsible because your fire is your mamon. Okay? So that's why when it's Mishum Chitzav, now we have to follow the logic. When it's Mishum Chitzav, you're Chayav B'tamun because it's your koach that went. When it's a case where it's not Mishum Chitzav, for example, you had this fence and the fence fell down and then your fire went into that space, well, you're still Chayav Mishum Mamono. And because you're Chayav, because it's your own fire that caused the damage. Now, you'd have to say that when we said that Rabbi Yochanan said that, oh, well, we don't hold Mamono because it ain't Bo Mamash, well, now we change that, okay? It doesn't work anymore to say that. And now we say that Rabbi Yochanan holds it's also Mishum Chitzav and also Mishum Mamono. So in a case when your Chitzav is not relevant, that your arrows never would have gotten there, but it's still your own fire, then we're going to say you're Patra B'tamun. Okay, then you're only Chayav B'Giloy and you're Patra B'tamun. So there's a nafkamina. In other words, there's one distinction. If you were to find a case like we just found where it's only Mishum Mamon and not Mishum Chitzav, that's when Tamun Be'esh will be Patra, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? And then they say, Ukigon, and what's a good case of Mamono here? They're going to say, Shehayalo Ligodra V'lo Gadra. He should have fenced it and he didn't. And that's why, one second, then again, why are we going to be mechayev you when it gets to this other field? So we're only going to be mechayev you when it gets to the other field in a case where you could have had enough time. Again, this is all seemingly unrealistic when you're talking about a fire that spreads very quickly. But when you could have had the time, I think about people in times of fire, you know, you start reacting, some people can't deal with it, and some people start reacting quickly and putting themselves into action. So if there was enough time to fence it off and he didn't, then he's going to be chayav in the other field. In other words, he's not chayav in the other field if the fence just happened to fall and there was nothing he could do about it. But he is chayav in the other field, and again, he'll be chayav for galoy and patur for tamun if he had an opportunity to fence in the field and he didn't. Dahatam sharohu velo tapach ba'ape. Right? It's similar, if we're going to call it mamon, it's like the case of putting your shore in an area that wasn't fenced in, and you're going to be responsible, right? If you fence in your shore, so you're not responsible, right? If someone opens the door and the shore gets out. So that's the same thing with a fire. If someone opened the fence, you know, and it broke by itself, well, then it's not your fault. But if you could have closed it up and the fire wouldn't have gotten there, you didn't, then you're going to be responsible. Okay, so now we're going to say, well, chime achar demandi itle mishum chitzav, itle nami mishum mamono, so my benayu. So if, right, if Rabbi Yochanan holds chitzav and mamono, and Rish Lakish holds mamono, so what's going to be the nafkamina between them? What's the difference? So what's going to be the answer? L'chayvo ba'arba'a dvarim. Okay, who knows what arba'a dvarim are? They're really chamisha dvarim. Okay, what's chamisha dvarim? Yafeh. Okay, there are five things that a person who damages somebody else is responsible for. Now remember, if your shur damages someone, you're responsible to pay damages. If you damage someone, you're responsible to pay five things. Nezek, Sa'ar, Ripoy, Shevet, and Boshet. So what are those things? Nezek are the damages you cause. Shevet is the time that he's no longer able to work. Ripoy are the doctor's bills. Sa'ar is the pain you caused him. And Boshet is the embarrassment you caused him. Okay? So now, if we're going to say that you're chayv mishum chitzav em mamono, so again, if it's a case where it's only mamono, so then you're only going to be chayav nezek. But if it's a case, like we explained, where it's also chitzav, let's say within the first area where this fire spread and it was expected to spread, so all the damage he caused, if he causes damage to a person, he's going to be chayav. Well, okay, now what does this mean? Our ba'advarim. So some of the mefarshim explain, it means obviously nezek plus the other four. But Rashi says, and that's the Rambam. The Rambam says that it's that it includes everything, and it just said four because it meant in addition to nezek. Rashi says you're not chayav in boshet, because boshet you're only chayav when you attempted to embarrass a person, and in this case you weren't attempting to embarrass the person. Okay, there was no intent for the damage that, you know. It's, right, so then the question is why, right, let me just, right, he claims you're not really, right, you're not mitzkaven because the ruach took it. In other words, there was some other factor operating here, and therefore you're not chayav in boshet. By the way, we're going to see this a lot, where boshet is this, you know, you're not always chayav in boshet. Okay, so he says you're not chayav, because we're going to see later that it says you're only chayav if you're mitzkaven, if you have intent. Okay, and in this case, you don't have intent. You didn't have intent.
Can I ask, yeah, maybe it's a technical question. Is there a difference between boshet for which you're not chayav and boshet for which you'd be chayav, but there are no damages, so there's nothing to pay on it?
Like, if could you just have boshet without damages?
Leave it there as something for which you're responsible, but in this case, there's nothing to pay on it.
I didn't follow, sorry.
Presumably for each of the five, the court is adjudicating an amount. You have to pay this much.
Right.
So you can be chayav for something, but if there's no, the court doesn't think there was any.
There was boshet, right? But we're talking about if there is boshet, you're not responsible to pay.
Right. I'm wondering whether there's a difference if they take it out as a category entirely when you're not chayav on it, or they leave it, but.
You're saying if they determine that there was no boshet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they can determine in cases there was no boshet. We're going to see later on cases where you're patur and boshet, and we'll talk about it then. Mm-hmm. Okay. Alacharara. Okay, so now we're done with that, with the whole case of was it Mishum Isha, was it Mishum Mamono. Okay. Alacharara Mishalem. So now what was this case? You remember with the dog? Okay, so the dog takes this harara, he takes this cake, which is attached to a hot coal, and he grabs it from someone's property, right? And then what does he do? He drops the, you know, he eats the cake, so he's chayav shein, right, for eating it. And then he puts the coal down in a field, and it burns the field. Okay, so what did we see here in the Mishnah? Ala charara mishalem nezek shalem, because that's shein. Va'ala gadish mishalem chatzi nezek. And we're going to get to this now, why mishalem chatzi nezek. Man chayav, so who's responsible? Who pays for this damage that was done, okay, for the on the gadish, okay, who pays this chatzi nezek? So the Gemara answers, bala kelef, okay, the one who owns the dog pays it because the dog did the damages. So now they say, v'lichayv nami baal gachelet. Maybe we should say, right, if it was your coal and you left it out in the open and the dog came and took your coal and burned a field with it, well, it was your responsibility. It's your mamo. Right? Again, we keep getting into this where there's multiple potential people who are responsible here. So now, what are they going to have to say then? Bishishi mer gachalato. It's a case where he hid his gachalet. In other words, he didn't leave it out in the open where the dog could easily get it. He put it away in a very safe place, and somehow the dog got to it, right? So then obviously we're going to have to ask that question. Well, if he really protected his gachelet, in which case he's not responsible, just like we said a minute ago. If you had the shur and you put a fence around it, and the shur somehow, right, somebody opens the door and lets the shur out, well, then you're not responsible. It wasn't your fault. You put him in a protected place.
Michelle?
Yeah.
The owner of the stock is different from the owner of the coal? Or the same?
Might be.
The owner of the... Right, so it's very likely it's someone different. That's what we're assuming here.
Okay.
He took a coal from somewhere. He ate it. You know, with the ate the food that was attached to it. Right. He drops the coal in someone else's field. Okay? So now...
Three.
Right, so there's three people. So now they say... That's if he really watched his gachelet, so what was the kelev doing with it? So the answer, b'shechatar. It's a case where the kelev got under the fence. Let's say there was a fence and he snuck under, right? We all see those cats sneaking under places, right? Even dogs can sneak into places. So that's the case. Okay, which then you'd have to say that if he got there, right? So you have to say that it's this in-between situation. Yes, it's a little atypical, but it's not enough atypical to call it chatzi nezek because he ate the chararan, he's chayev nezek shalem. So it's not so mishuneh, but it's not, right? In other words, the owner is at least responsible because he did put up a fence. In fact, this fence didn't fully protect from everything. Well, that's not his responsibility. But yet, it's still, in other words, it's weird because it has to be a case where the dog could typically go under there. However, not typical enough to say that the owner didn't watch it, you know, protect it enough. Like this in between. Amar Rav Meir Berei Rav Kahana. Zot omeret, that's what we're going to say now. Stam dlatot chaturot hen etzel kelev. Okay? Okay, so that's what we're going to say now. That's what I just said. We can infer from here, Rav Meir says in the name of Rav Kahana, we can infer from here that regular delet is something that a kelev can sneak underneath. And again, that's why we're not going to make, we're making the kelev responsible 100% for the shein, and we're not calling it chatzi nezek. Because you can actually get through, but again, not enough that the guy is responsible. Da'ach lahecha, where did he eat this charara? Ilema da'ach la begadish da'alma habi'inan ubi'yebristeh achir. If he just ate it, in other words, if you're talking about that there were three people, this goes back to now, where was he eating this, right? If he was eating it in just a random field, not the one that was owned, in other words, if it was a third person's field and not the one owned by the Bala Harara, so don't we need Ubi Erbiste Acher Veleka? Didn't we say you have to do the damages when you do Shein in the Chatzer of the Nizak? And now if we're assuming that there were three people here, there was the guy who owns the dog. The dog went into a field, stole the cake with the coal, ran into someone else's field, ate the cake, and dumped the coal. Well, then he's not be'er b'steh acher, because he has to be in the sadeh the nizak when he does the damage. So what do they say? Lo tzricha da'achla begadish tabal charara. Okay, we're going to have to assume that when he ate it, okay, maybe he dropped the coal in a third field, but when he ate the charara, he ate it in the field of the guy who he stole it from. Tiff showed. So now they're going to suggest something very strange. The fact that he pays for this charara, we can learn from here, depi para kechatzer hanizak dami. Okay. Very strange sugya we're going to get into. The mouth of a para. Now what happens? Your property, remember we talked about your chatzer, something happens in your chatzer, it's as if it's in your property. So let's say something goes into the mouth of the para. Do we say that it's now changed ownership and the mouth of the para is it's your property? So it's as if it's in your property. Okay? That's what they're going to say. So now they're going to say, yes, very strange. They're talking about the mouth of the para. Okay? There's a bunch of different ways. I'm going to explain this according to the real pshat of this sugya, which is a little bizarre. Okay? We'll see after that there's a few other potential pshatim of what they're really suggesting here. But now they're going to say, we can infer from here that the mouth of the para, okay, so the para, let's say it could be a para, in our case it's a kelev, but they're giving an example of para. The mouth of a para, when it eats something, is going to be considered the domain of whatever rishut he happens to be in at the time. So if he's in the rishut of the person whose food he's eating, well then he's responsible because he's in the chatzar and nizak.
They chew their cuds, so... Dogs eat and it's done. Cows eat and then it comes up and then they eat it and it comes up.
So you want to suggest that...
So there's more places that the para could be.
It's wandering around at the same time.
It could continue wandering around.
Right,
but what they're looking at is not where he's going. They're looking at his mouth.
Right.
Is his mouth considered within his body? You're saying it comes out?
You digest it.
So it'll come out.
And you digest it again.
Yeah, you're right.
So you're saying there's a real reshut within your mouth because a lot's going on inside your mouth. Or it's going out of your mouth, which means it's going to end up being in your mouth. It's going to be in his mouth. I see. It's coming in and out of its body.
Stomach number one, it comes into his mouth. It goes into stomach number two.
But no matter what, the whole time it's in his mouth. Whether it's
just like Judy's suggesting that it wandered.
Well, in its body, I mean. No, yeah, but within its body. It's not going out of its body.
But it's going out. It's going in and out of its mouth.
It's going to different places. Yeah, but in and out of its mouth doesn't bother us. Here we're talking about pia para would mean inside, anywhere inside the body of the para. That's what we're saying. In other words, once it goes, we're talking about the cow's body as opposed to, right, let's say you're all in my house right now, okay? So the question is, if you eat food and you put it in your mouth, at the moment you put it in your mouth, is that considered... it's your reshut that you're eating in because it's in your body? Or is it considered because you're in my house that you're eating within my reshut? That's you gain ownership over that. Think about it, right? No one's going to eat the food after that.
No.
So in a sense, you gain ownership over that food by putting it in your mouth. Okay. So if you then eat it, and maybe you could also say with the chewing the cud, in other words, first it goes into its mouth, then it starts getting digested by him, right? So once you put it in its mouth, does it belong to the cow at that point? And then... you're not doing shame b'chatzar nisad. Now, this is a ridiculous havamina because then there would never be shame, okay? Which is why some of the mefarshim say that that's not actually the question, okay? They say that, just to lose me for a second what the issue is. Right. The question would only be in the case, not where the cow actually takes the food and eats it. Then 100% the cow is going to be chayav. The question would be, what if somebody shoved food into the cow's mouth? And you're going to see that it somewhat matches some of the sugya as it develops later, and that maybe that's the question. That's what Tosfos says. The question is, if somebody shoves food into its mouth, then do we say that the food is now being, you know, he didn't do an act of actually eating it, and now when he's eating it, it was stuck into his reshut, and it's considered already the reshut of the para, which means it's the reshut of the baal, the mazik, and not the nizak. Okay, the Gemara is going to say not, but okay, you just have to understand where exactly the havamin is. So either we're talking about any kind of case, okay, or we're talking about when someone shoved the food in its mouth. There's other options given also, but I'm going to keep it a little simpler and not get into a million options. Yeah.
Did we once see something about this on Shabbos about putting something in your mouth?
Well, first of all, there's the Tuma Bebet Havliya. There's a whole thing about that something is tameh while it's being, there's like a certain type of Tuma Bebet Havliya, like as it's being swallowed. And like when you have something in your mouth, and it's tameh, there's a particular type of tumah that your mitameh things that you touch while it's in your mouth. There's something like that. Maybe that's what you're referring to. That's what I could think of right now. Maybe there's something else also.
And isn't there a differentiation with
nisak? Wait. There was carrying. Carrying,
right.
Yes. Carrying when you have something in your mouth and you know, can you stick it in your mouth and go from reshut to reshut? Right. Right, there was this thing that they would particularly eat.
Tobacco,
they would chew tobacco.
Like,
it wasn't tobacco,
yeah,
but it was something like that. They would chew for breath, so they wouldn't have bad breath. Okay, they were right. Okay.
But nisak, isn't there also intent? Like, doesn't that differentiate between shame, rego, and karen?
Yeah, if you had intent.
If you have intent, so with Tosfot, if you're saying it's being stuffed in the animal's mouth.
Yeah, because but the animal's still getting hana'ah. In other words, someone might shove the food in its mouth, but it'll enjoy it while it eats it. The whole thing with Shane is he's getting hana'ah. He's enjoying the moment, which the act, which we're going to see soon, because they were going to, if you remember, that's the whole concept of Shane. It doesn't even have to be eating. It could be any other sort of hana'ah that the animal's getting. And when they're stuck into a corner now, they're going to suggest that. So here, hold on. So right now they're going to say, let's assume from here that a pi paraz kachatzer anizak dami. If the mouth of the para is still considered like it's the chatzer of the nizak. If you're eating food in my house, it's as if you're eating it in my house, even though it goes into your mouth. Di'i kachatzer hamazik dami lemale ma bai raftecha bepuma de kalbai. You could say, right, the baal ha... one second, let me just... the... Bala Kelev could say, right, one second, we're talking about, right, the Kelev ate the Harara. So you could say, what's your bread doing in the mouth of my dog? In other words, my dog's mouth, it's my reshut. It doesn't belong in other words, it's out of your reshut, it's in my reshut. So, di Bailahu, Okay, now they're going to point out that, by the way, this was a question that was asked. Okay, so now they're siding on the side of, right, you wouldn't be chayav, the kelev wouldn't be chayav, basically, for this harara, if once it goes into its mouth, he's not chayav, right? It becomes reshut hamazik, because you're not chayav for reshut hamazik. So now they're going to point out, by the way, that this was asked as a question. Okay? D'ibai lehu. Pi para kechatzar anizak dami, o kechatzar amazik dami. Okay? This was asked, is it considered the chatzar anizak or the chatzar amazik? V'i amar kechatzar amazik dami, shein d'chiyav rachmana hechem ishkach ala. So if you're going to say it's like the chatzar amazik, then how could you ever have a case of shein where you're chayav? Now, by the way, this question supports the reading, the pshat reading. Then we're talking about any kind of shein, because otherwise you could never have shein. Because anytime he puts it in his mouth, right, this is a little more difficult with the Tosfot reading, because the Tosfot reading would simply answer, well, when you shove it in its mouth, there's no shein. When it eats it by itself, there is shein. So Tosfot reading is a little hard for this. On the other hand, Tosfot reading makes a little more sense. How could you, right? How could there even be a hava mina? Okay. Amar of Mary Bered Rav Kahana. Here I'll show you a case of shein. Kigon shenikachecha bakotel lahanata, v'timpa perot lahanata. Here's two cases where he rubs up against the wall and ruins the wall. Okay, why is he rubbing against the wall? Because it's a pleasurable activity. Now it's like what I said before, that shein is anything that the animal gets hana'a from. So if he rubs up against the wall for his own pleasure and ruins the wall, then he's going to be chayav. Or, timfa perot lanata. He gets, right, he starts stepping on perot, like for in a pleasurable manner, or he kind of licks them or whatever he does. Rashi says it's like a gilgul, okay, and shosim susim v'chamurim, chamurim, okay, some sort of like rolling around on the floor, and he smushes these fruits, okay, and gets them all dirty, and he did it because it was fun for him to roll around on the floor. So that would be a case of shein, okay? So if you're struggling to find shein, right, which basically would mean, again, if you go according to the pshat, and you're going to say that the hava mina, again, this is all the hava mina, because the conclusion is, it's chatzar anizak. But the hava mina was to say that maybe there is no shein by actually eating, which is just strange to say that, right? Or again, you'd have to explain, according to Tosfot, that we're only talking about if someone shoves it into his mouth. Okay, but then this answer is a little strange. Matkiflamar Zutra, yeah.
I had a trampoline and my neighbor's cats would come and scratch on, you know, the
Neighbor's cats would scratch the trampolines. Yeah, the foam.
Yeah, and they shredded it completely. They would only pay me chatzi nezek.
Shein is full nezek. Shein is full nezek. So if the animals were doing it lahanatam, then yes. If you would say it's mishuneh, like that's not typical behavior, then they would only have to pay you half. Okay, so if cats come and ruin, I wonder if that's how mine got ruined.
It is.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I was wondering how mine got shredded. I don't have Ron. I don't know whose cats did it. Or do I know whose dogs leave things all over my crayon? Okay. Matki plamar zutra. But how could you say that it's nechachabakota lanata, or timfapirot lanata? That would be shein. Don't we know, vaha bi'ina, in order to be machayev in shein, it has to be kasher yav er hagalala tumo. Who remembers the first daf where we said that's the source for shein? Okay, that kasher yav er hagalala tumo means once something becomes completely consumed. So shein, that's what we generally thought of shein. You eat the food. If you eat the food, it's entirely consumed. Vileka, and in this case, what did he do? He rubbed up against the wall, he ruined the wall, but the wall is still there, it's just not great. Or, the fruits are dirty and not in great shape, but they're still in existence. In order for it to be shein, it has to be entirely, destroyed, or I was thinking of another word, consumed. Okay. So Ravina Amar, Deshaf Tzalme. Rav Ashi Amar, Depase Psue. Okay, the first example is Shaf Tzalme, where he rubs up against the wall, and there were things coming out of the wall, like there were etchings in the wall, and he totally destroyed them. Okay, where he ruined something that was in the wall. Pase Psue is he rolls over on the fruits, and he so much rolls over them that they get completely buried in, like, kind of smushed into the ground that they're not even, you know, they're underneath now, you can't even access them. Like, they're basically completely destroyed. Okay, so that's the end of our question, basically. They say that there was a question. They say, how could you have even asked that question? And then they give a few examples of shein that would have worked, even if you would say, right, that the pi para is demeim, is the reshut of the mazik, and therefore if it goes in its mouth, you're already patur, because shein, the reshut of mazik, is patur. But In these cases, we could find a case of shein, where it's, again, shein is a general category that really means you're getting hana'ah, and here we could find a case where you get hana'ah, but you'd have to say it was hana'ah, where you completely destroy what it is, and then it would obviously completely narrow the scope of shein, if you would say this, but like I said, anyway, we said it's like katsar and nizak, and it's not the case. This was all just to explain what they even thought when they asked the question. Okay, now we're going to have, this is coming now to, we're still in the sugya. We're trying to figure out now, is it, okay, we brought our sugya to say it sounds like it's chatzar and nizak. Now we're going to bring other sources to see, is it chatzar and nizak or chatzar and mazik? Shisavo et hakelev, shisavo et hanachash patur. Okay, if somebody entices a dog to bite somebody, or entices a snake to bite someone. Okay, so now, patur. Now the question is going to be, I specifically said patur, and I didn't say who, because that's going to be the question. Man patur, who is patur? So they say, mishase patur, v'chaya bala kelef. Okay, the guy who enticed the animal to bite is patur. But who's chayav? And the assumption is, right, so now if I say, right, this, it's really the natural way I would have said it, if I really said it the whole way, which is someone who entices a kelev, it seems to be that they're the subject of that sentence. Where someone who entices a snake is patur, right? That person is patur. But somebody has to take responsibility, so who's going to be chayav the kelev? So what would you see here? Iyamar kechatar amazik dami, lema lema, my bayat chabe pume de kalbay, right? What's your hand doing in the mouth of my dog? That's my reshut, my dog's mouth, right? Okay, it's like, I can imagine a fight ensuing between two kids, you know, one bites the other's finger and he says, well, what was your finger doing in my mouth, right? I didn't tell you to put your finger in my mouth. That's basically what this is saying, okay? So what was your hand doing in the mouth of my dog? It's not my fault, okay? So therefore, if we read this as we did, assuming that who's patur, the guy who enticed, but not the dog owner. The dog owner is going to be chayav, obviously, because it's not chatzar mazik, it's chatzar nizak. The mouth of a dog is still, if he's biting it in the person's property, it's his property, you know, it's his fault. So now they say, no, you could say, ema patur af mishaseh. You could say, no, even the one who's enticing the dog is patur, meaning nobody is actually responsible. The mishaseh is not responsible because he didn't do anything, and the dog is not responsible because it's considered, you know, what were you putting your hands in his mouth for? Okay. V'i bayit ema, or you could explain, de'afke l'nive b'sarte. Maybe the dog is chayav, but why is he chayav? Because he put out his teeth and he bit outside of the realm of his mouth. Okay, right? When we were talking about the para, we were talking about para eating food. Here we're talking about him biting someone. So if he takes his teeth out, and, you know, dog's teeth are pretty big, right? They can go out of his mouth, attack someone with, you know, grabbing onto his teeth without actually pulling them inside his mouth, and that way it'll be chatzar and nizak. Okay. But really, if it were in his mouth, you could say it's chatzar and mazik. Okay. And he'd be patur. So therefore, inconclusive. Let's try another source. Tashma. Heishich bo et hanachash, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev chachamim potrim. Okay, if he, this is the, I think it's all, right, if he causes the nachash to bite, somebody causes a nachash to bite. Right, what's the difference? Is there a difference? I think here it's just he gets him to bite someone. I don't think it's much of a difference. I think it's the same, you know, a different word just used, I think. Heshich bo et hanachash, so there's a machloket. Rabbi Yehuda's mechayev chachamim or potrim. Now, we don't really understand this yet, but now we're going to read it according to Rabbi Acha's Bar Yaakov's reading of this machloket. Ba'amar Acha Bar Yaakov, kishetimsi lomar ledivri Rabbi Yehuda, eres nachash ben shinav hu omed, lefichach machish besayit v'nachash patur. What does he say here? There's a difference of opinion about how the poison of a snake works, because when it's a dog, it's clearly his bite that's causing the problems, right? But it, in a case of the nachash, although dogs could have rabies, things like that, but it's not like, it's not right. So now, when it comes to the poison of a nachash, the whole question is the poison of a nachash in his mouth? And therefore, what happens? It's not that he actually, what are they saying? When you open the mouth of a nachash, is there poison just sitting there? Or does the nachash do an act to get the poison to come out? So if you say that the eres, the poison, is just sitting there, then what are you going to say here? That's why Rabbi Yehuda is mechayev. And who is he mechayev? He's mechayev, by the way, we're talking about where he actually kills the person with his poison. So now, if you take a nachash and you put him up, you take the person's hand, let's say, and you put it up against the mouth of a nachash, so the nachash doesn't actually have to do anything to kill this person. Once it gets into the airspace of the mouth of the nachash, then the poison is there without the nachash having done anything. So therefore, what does Rabbi Yehuda say? The machish gets saib. He actually killed somebody. The guy who caused the snake to bite killed somebody. And the nachash is patur, meaning obviously, right? The nachash, what does it mean he's patur, by the way? It's the owner, but it's not even the owner. He's supposed to get killed like a shor haniskal, remember? If a shor kills a person, we kill the shor. So the nachash would also have to get killed here. And in this case, we don't kill the nachash. But l'divrei chachamim, eres nachash me'atzmo miki. The nachash, right? He does it himself. He brings up the eres to his mouth. It doesn't just sit there all the time waiting to come out. L'fichach, nachash b'schila o machish patur. Therefore, the machish didn't actually do the act. He just kind of was a facilitator. But who actually did it? The nachash himself. And therefore, the nachash is chayav. Even though they say patur, they're referring to the machish bo, right? The insider. V'i amar pi para kechatzar mazik dame le'malem ma'bay yudcha b'pumei dechavai. Okay, so what would you say? Why would the nachash have to get killed? The owner could say, "What was your hand doing in the mouth of my nachash?" So now, what do they answer? No, you can't necessarily assume that because, right? And that, by the way, would be explaining only the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, right? The opinion of Chachamim, who say that the nachash atzmo is responsible. Okay, so according to Chachamim, you would say. Clearly, if that's what, right now, this is really all according to Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, who explains their machloket that way. So according to Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, you'd have to say the piparaz kechatzera nizak tami. So they say, no, le'inan kat lo amrinan. There's a difference between death and damages. This is a death case. Death cases we're going to take differently. We're not going to say, when we're talking about damages, so it's important. If I go into your house and I kill you, what do we say? I'm not responsible because I killed you in your house? Of course I'm responsible. I'm responsible for death anywhere. So therefore, we're going to say, when we talked about responsibility depends on, is it chatzar nizak, chatzar mazik, right? Where you are is important. And the whole debate about whether or should of the nachash, was it in his mouth, was it not in his mouth, that only has to do with damages. It doesn't have to do with when you kill somebody. When you kill somebody, you're responsible anywhere. So therefore, this whole thing is irrelevant. How do we know this? Titania, because there's a brayta that says, now, by the way, me coming into your house and killing you isn't a great example, because what we're talking here is if your property kills somebody. So now they're going to bring an example to prove it. How do we know that le'inyan katla it's different, and it doesn't matter where you are? Titania, hanichnas l'chatzar balabayit, shelo birishut, v'nagcho shorosh balabayit, umet, hashur b'skila u'balim p'turim min ha'kofer. Okay, so now they say, what's the case? If somebody comes into the chatzar balabayit, somebody comes into my house, and my shor kills him, so my shor is responsible. But I am not responsible. Normally, what do we say? The bala shor should get killed, right? And instead of getting killed, what does he do? He pays his way out. The shor gets stoned, and the bala shor has to pay his way out of getting killed. Really, he should get killed, but we don't kill him. So now what do they say? Balim p'turim min ha'kofer my taima. Why is he p'turim min ha'kofer? Da'amar le b'reshute my bite. Right? So now, if you're going to say, why is the Baal p'tur? Because why? Because he says, what were you doing in my reshut? Right? It was you took your own risk. You came into my reshut. But if that's the case, sharonami le male my bite b'reshuta. My bite b'reshute. But the shor also could say, what were you doing in my reshut? Right? In other words, the owner could say, don't kill my shor. It wasn't his fault. You came into my house, right? You imagine these dogs start barking when people come into the house, and they're supposed to protect from strangers coming in. Maybe the shor killed this guy because he thought he was a trespasser. Like, what were you doing here? So what do you learn from here? Ela linyan katla lo amrinan. You can't say that that's an excuse, linyan katla. Okay, when it comes to death, the shor is going to be responsible no matter what. And therefore, the whole issue of whose reshut it's in is irrelevant. So in the end, we don't come to a conclusion about this issue, right? They brought these sources to try to prove it, but they're not able to prove it. Okay. Hanu ize debate tarbu. There were these Izim that belonged to the house of Tarabu to have a mifsidei leila Rav Yosef. They were causing Rav Yosef a lot of damage. Okay, they kept coming in, these goats, and eating from his property. Amar leila Abaye, zil emalehu lamarayu delitzni inhu. Go tell their owners that they should assuming they should put up a fence, right? They should close them up. Usually litzni inu is to hide them or something, but I assume it means here to close them up in a fence. Right, yeah. That they should basically, he should close them up. So Amar Leh, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, remember the relationship Abaye Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef was blind, remember? Abaye was a student of his, and when Rav Yosef got older, he always forgot things, and Abaye would always remind him of his Torah. So he was a student, but obviously a very good student of his, okay? Now, Abaye, by the way, I'm going to remind you, we go back to this very interesting sugya we saw in Megillah about Mishloach Manot and Abaye. Abaye, remember, he was an orphan, and he grew up in the house of Rabbah, and he brings these Mishloach Manot of Rabbah to someone else, and then he says to him, why would you be bringing this? The guy's going to say this about you, and then he brings it to the next guy, and the guy gives him something back, and he says, why are you giving him this? He's going to say this about you. So this is the exact same. You can see his personality. Okay, he's going to say the exact same thing. Why would you send me to do this? They're going to say blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it's just interesting that it repeats itself, this type of, right? And first of all, Abaye a little bit was a pessimistic type person, which might also explain, right, because he lost his parents. His father died when his mother conceived him, when he was conceived in his mother died in childbirth. So he basically grew up without parents at all, didn't have an easy life. He always talks about food also. He's very food, a little food obsessed. Food was obviously not easy to come by for him. And a little bit he had a pessimistic personality. Another one of the reasons why we don't paskin like him when it comes to Abaye and Rava, it's like Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. We always paskin like Rava because he had a kind of harmonious type approach to things, whereas Abaye was a little more into the absolute truth and he says things like it is. Maybe he was a little lacking tact. So here, what does he say to him? So instead of saying to Rav Yosef, sure, I'll go and do this. I'll tell them, you know, you should put a gate up. Amar Leh, Amai Iza, why should I go and tell them? De'ia zilna amrali ligdor mar gedera ba'are vi gadar shein dechia. Okay, so now one second. So he says, they're going to tell me, if you want to protect your field, Rav Yosef, you should put up your own fence. It's your responsibility to protect your own field. Now they say, wait a minute. Vi gadar shein dechia rachmane hechi mishkachala. So if it's Rav Yosef's responsibility, as Abaye says, if it's actually true, that you yourself have to put up a gate, and if you don't have a gate and someone comes and eats in your property, it's your fault, then Shane, how is Shane ever going to be responsible for Chatzar and Isaac, right? Either there's going to be a fence and no one will ever get into anyone else's property, or there's not going to be a fence, in which case you're not hired for Shane because the owner should have put up his own fence. So what are you talking about, Abaye? So now they answer, Kishachatra. Inami denafaguda balelya. Either you are responsible to put up a fence, right? This is a great thing if you think about robberies, right? You should put up soragim, but it's not going to say that the robbers can't come and bend your soragim and get in, right? It's a deterrent, okay? You put up trisim, they can break them. You put up locks, you have these pins in your windows and to protect them, and they can smash the glass and get right in. So it's a deterrent. You'll 50% or 70% of the robbers will see your house, you have an alarm on. That should be a deterrent. But some of them don't care and they go in anyway. So that's what they're saying here. Yes, you're responsible to put up a fence. However, it could still be that they could sneak in under the fence, or denafaguda balalia. In other words, it could be that the fence, you're responsible to put up a fence, but it could be that the fence fell at night, nobody noticed, and that's when they came in. Right? So then they'd be responsible for shame, because you did your share, right? You fenced up your thing. But according to this, it's very interesting. So if you don't put any sort of barrier, well, then you can't blame people for coming. If their animals are going to damage, that's what they're going to damage.
If you don't put your alarm on.
Right. If you don't put your alarm on and they come and rob, right, that's why the insurance company won't pay. Okay. Machriz Rav Yosef, v'itei maraba, disalkin le'ilo dinachtin le'tatai. Those who go up and down, which means the people who go from Eretz Yisrael to Babel and from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Hani izay deshuka demafsadei Mashrim b'marayu treyu tlaltin zimna, itzai itzai, v'ilo, amrin anle, tiv amschata v'kabal zuzcha. Okay, so now he's saying that these goats that are in the shuk, that are supposed to be slaughtered. Now what's the issue? You bring your goats to the shuk to slaughter them, but when do you want to slaughter them? On the day of the shuk. You want it to be fresh meat, right? They're never refrigerators. You don't want to shech the meat before the day of the shuk, because when it's not the day of the shuk, right, Mondays and Thursdays were the shuk days, there's not a lot of people out there to buy your stuff. So you don't want to shech them earlier, but what's the problem? They're omdim l'shchita, but the owners aren't really paying attention to them, and they're doing all sorts of damage. So what do they say? If there's izim in the shuk that are mafsideh, that are causing damage, okay, this guy comes to the shuk the day before the shuk, or 2 days before, and his izim are running around, and they're causing all sorts of damage. They're eating things in the shuk there, right? So what do? Matrinam b'marayhu trei v'tlat izimnim. We warn them 2 or 3 times. And if they listen, in other words, we warn them and we say, shech your animal now, because your animal is causing danger. If they listen, great. V'lo amrinan le tivam schata v'kabal zuzcha. In other words, we warn them, and if they pay attention, I think it means if they, you know, protect them from, they stop them from damaging. And if not, we force them, we say, slaughter those animals now and get your money for them, even if you're going to take a loss because you're going to have to sell it on a day when it's not the shuk day. But that loss is not worth what's happening. Now, some of the mafreshim say, well, what if they say, I'm willing to pay damages? I don't care. I'll pay, you know, I'd rather wait the extra time. It's worth it to me, and I'll pay whatever damage they cause. So they say even that is not allowed, because people's attitude isn't like, oh, well, you'll eat my stuff and you'll pay me back. That's not what they want. They want their stuff. They don't want their stuff to get damaged. It's a headache. Then people have to bring them to court. What if there's no witnesses? What if there's this? You know, so basically they say if your animals are causing damage, you have to slaughter them right away, and you know, we're not going to allow this to go on. And you can see that they said this because obviously they were dealing with situations that were going on, masim b'chol yom, that they had to deal with, and they said, you know, no more. You have to take responsibility. Tomorrow we get into Shor Muad. We're going to talk about how does an animal who is a Shor Muad, can he go back at a certain point to becoming a Tam? And ooh, at what point do you know? Which is very interesting, because we'll remember this sugya when we get to Sanhedrin, and they talk about if you're pasul le'edut, because you did something wrong, when do we accept you back in? So it's a little different, but...